This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080.
You march, you march. What are you doing? Your pack has got your back as stiff as starch.
This is a mechanized war, they say. That saying is sure a bust.
Cause all that you see in the infantry is one another's dust. What are you doing? The infantry, you hike, you hike, you hike. What are you doing? The infantry, you left and right a blight.
Everyone else can ride a jeep or fly up in the sky,
but there's nothing to ride in the infantry. You're just a tired guy.
The hard way, the hard way, sweat till you get there, the hard way.
What do they say in the infantry? They squawk and squawk and squawk, all about miles and miles and miles that they have had to walk.
They march across the ocean, and that's quite a trick to do.
But don't forget the Air Corps has done some marching too. What are you doing, the ground crew? You're always fixing planes. Never a chance to sleep and dream of beautiful G.I. Janes.
You're patching a hole in the fuselage or loading the bomber sticks.
What are you doing, the ground crew? You fix and fix and fix. What are you doing, the air crew, when the flak begins to scream? How can you duck when the bombardier's so steady on the beam?
How can you dig a foxhole or jump behind a tree?
Wouldn't you love to march away just like the infantry?
The soft way, the soft way. Try to crash land, brother, the soft way.
What are you doing? Your gas is gone and you're flying a thunderbolt. You at the silk and say a prayer and land with an awful jolt.
You drop in a jungle and wrench your back. You're thinking of giving up.
Yet what do you mumble crawling back? It's hop, two, three, four, hop.
Okay, good morning and aloha. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back, and had a little picture-taking session there and what have you, and kind of excited, not kind of, I am excited and really happy to be here this morning. And I have one of our friends, Mr. Lieutenant Colonel retired, Alexander Jefferson, as some of you who've been with the show for a while, he is one of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. That's what we used to say.
Yeah.
When we were young and full of tea and vinegar. Tea and vinegar.
Tea.
Tea and vinegar.
And as we know, we the other sidekick who's we were always fond of is Bill Holloman, Colonel
yes.
Bill Holloman, and he's now deceased. And I know that you miss him. And
I miss my old buddy. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. And I just absolutely, I too, and if you meet them and you become fond of them, and they're like family. And so, especially from the historical point, but once you get to know, and once I got to know the two of you, I feel honored, and have always, I really appreciate you sharing mm-hmm. your time with me. And
we were like Mutt and Jeff. On our yearly visit to Hawaii every February.
Now, which one was Mutt?
Well, we had a thing going on between the two of us. We would back and forth in our presentations. We had a good time. Mm-hmm. We had a good time.
And so that the listeners would know, if you have a school or have an organization that you'd be interested in having Colonel Jefferson come and speak with you or what have you, you can call me. And I don't know, when are you leaving town this time?
No, I leave next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
And you're up to?
I'm at the Ilokai.
Okay, and you're able to give a talk or a presentation? If
surely.
I
give out emails and they give out a telephone.
Mm-hmm. And now, some of you know of Colonel Jefferson and his involvement with the Tuskegee and the history. And I'm just going to ask him if he'd give a brief introduction on the Tuskegee Airmen and its mm-hmm. founding mm-hmm. and its purpose mm-hmm. and some of the big. We've done this drill before.
Yeah. Same old thing. World War II is going along, and blacks were denied the opportunity to fly for the United States. And pressure was brought by the NAACP, Urban League, black newspapers, Michigan Chronicle, Baltimore, so forth and so on. Finally, pressure was brought, and Congress allotted $3 million to build an airfield in Alabama, especially to train Negroes to fly airplanes for the Army Air Corps. I was fortunate enough to qualify, and I graduated. Got my wings in January 1944. So, therefore, I'm 44A.
Mm-hmm.
February will be 44B. The first class came out in 1942 with Colonel Davis, there are five. First class, March 42.
Mm-hmm.
The last class came out in March 46.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyone in the Army Air Corps, officer, enlistee, you name it, in the Army Air Corps, who's black during that time, is considered a Tuskegee Airman, period.
Mm-hmm.
We had approximately 900 officers, 900 pilots, plus over 25 to 30,000 other people. For every one officer, one pilot, you had 10 or 15 other people. Cooks, bottle washers, truck drivers, the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
So we surmise anywhere between from 42 to 46, anywhere from 25 to 30,000 people who are, quote, Tuskegee Airmen. Not only pilots, not only officers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a job to do, and we did the job.
So President Franklin Roosevelt was faced with the issue and the concern we might be entering in the war, and we needed to start training people. And so this is one of the things that came about, and the conscription. What about the law that required?
Oh, the draft? You talk about the draft law?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things that hit me. I was going to be drafted. If I were drafted, I'd go to the quartermaster, because all Negroes I'm using the word Negro now, because my dad and everybody else, the church, accepted the word colored. They accepted the word Negro. And if I were drafted, and in 1941, there's no such thing as, hell no, I won't go. No, baby, I got news for you. Either you go to draft or you go to jail.
Yeah.
Period. Civil liberties didn't give you a lawyer then. But rather than be a good quartermaster, the opportunity came to go to the Army Air Corps. We were all college graduates. There's another thing, see. The vicious racist system says if you're black, you have to be doubly qualified. If you're white, you could be a high school dropout. Chuck Yeager, famous. Don't get me wrong now. He had a fantastic pilot. But he received his GED after he got out of service. He was a high school dropout. We had to be college graduates. I was fortunate. I qualified. And I became a pilot, as I said before, in January 1944. And we had combat to do. We flew combat for the United States of America with the 99th 1st Fighter Squadron, North Africa. And around three other squadrons were formed, and forming the 332nd Fighter Group. We escorted the bombers from Italy to Germany, Italy to Ploesti. We flew top cover. And we did a job.
Now, I found interesting in through reading over the years that black leaders at that time in the 30s made a pitch that we, as African Americans, should share in the protection of this country. That in itself, you know, saying we live here, we've had difficulties, but yet we still should share. And
basically, it's the fact somebody's off. I've often been bombarded. Well, Colonel Jefferson, why did you fight for this country? They treated you so badly. I said, whoa, back up. Wait a minute. Okay. I personally can go back to 1815. I can trace my lineage back to 1815. This is my country. I resent someone coming over here from Germany, Italy, France in 1910 through Ellis Island, acting as though possessively this is their land, telling me to go back to Africa. As Chappie James will say, I will hold her hand, I'll protect her, but damn it, I'm going to make her treat me the way she should. And this has always been the attitude of all blacks, all African Americans. This is our land.
Yeah.
And realistically, I think the American Indian is the one who really got shafted. Think about it. We're all Americans.
Yeah. So, and in 40, the Selective Training and Service Act that came about, and it made it illegal to discriminate. And
that's right.
And Chappie and others were...
Exactly.
Just absolutely. When you talk about the beginners, Major George Spanky.
Spanky Roberts.
Right.
In the first class, along with Colonel Davis. Spanky Roberts was he was second in command of the 332nd Fighter Group. In fact, he was second in command of the P-40s when the 99th went over to North Africa. See, the 99th Squadron was composed of 16 airplanes and approximately 25 pilots, with all the support, the mechanics, the food, the intelligence, the navigation, the whole shebang. The first pilot, the first 99th went over in April, May of 43, North Africa. And they flew, they were 500 miles back behind the lines, could never come in contact with German fighters, and were criticized because they had no fighters shot down. And Colonel Davis had to come back to the Armed Services Committee to answer for it. But they were so far back from the front lines. They did mostly front line support, bombing and strafing front line support all across North Africa from Morocco around to Sicily. And They went in from Italy to Algiers. No, the invasion of in Italy,
mm-hmm.
where they had the first chance to engage German fighters. And they shot down 6 or 7 or 8, 9, 10 German fighters. Invasion of my memory's gone.
Yeah, the movie I think depicts one of those at first instance.
That's correct.
The scabs or the that area.
That area.
It was a landing.
That's right. It was a landing near Naples,
mm-hmm.
and this is when they had their first victories, extensive victories. The 99th then joined the other three squadrons that had been formed over at Ramicelli on the north side of Italy. They were transferred into P-51 Mustangs. That's they attained their red tails
mm-hmm.
for air identification.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, here's another myth. In the first movie, Fishburne came back, and he was sitting there with his mechanic. The mechanic had a little red paint, and Fishburne told him, paint the whole darn thing red. That is a bunch of horse malarkey.
Mm-hmm.
How can a second lieutenant depict the whole squadron for air identification? It came from the 15th Air Force. Higher-ups
mm-hmm.
depicted, we had three other groups, three white groups in Italy. One group was the 52nd. It was Yellowtails. The other group was the 325th. They were checkerboard, black and yellow squares on the tails. The fourth group, the 31st Fighters group,
mm-hmm.
was a red and white stripe. So if you saw a red and white stripe on the tail of a P-51 over Berlin, you knew it was the 31st Fighters group.
Mm-hmm.
If it was solid red over Ploesti, you knew it was the 332nd Fighter Group.
Mm-hmm.
It was air identification mm-hmm. depicted by the 15th Air Force. That's how we got our red tails.
Right. Now, you know, I was when we talked about you coming and sharing mm-hmm. This morning, I made a call to my home down there in Mississippi.
Ah, down behind the cotton curtain. Yes.
Exactly, the cotton curtain. But anyway, in speaking with my relatives, within the family directly and mm-hmm. indirectly related is Lieutenant Colonel Herbert Carter.
Oh, yes, Herbert Carter.
And you know him.
Absolutely.
And I talked to his nephew because he's ailing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But in his 90 or 90s.
He's 94.
94 years old.
Yes.
And I'd just like to read what the son, the nephew sent me, and in Amory, Mississippi is where he's from. They dedicated a park
right.
and what have
mm-hmm,
you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was Lieutenant Colonel Carter was born in Amory in 1919, the fourth of ten children. At 15 years of age, he went to Tuskegee to live with an older brother.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, he played football, basketball, and ran track.
Mm-hmm.
He was also president of the Honor Society and his senior class. A veteran of World War II, fighter pilot Carter was an original member of the 99th Fighter Squadron,
yes.
Tuskegee Airmen, who flew in combat tours in North Africa, Sicilian, and European campaigns. They were the first all-black Army force, Air Force squadron. Colonel Carter flew more than 77 operational missions against the Germans and the Italian forces. He was awarded the Air Medal with 4 Oak Leaf Clusters, Air Force Commendation Medals, Distinguished Unit
mm-hmm.
Citation, European Theater Medal,
mm-hmm.
National Defense Medal, and Air Force Longevity Medal. After retiring, Colonel Carter served for more than a decade at Tuskegee Institute in various capacities. And he also served as the president of the Tuskegee chapter, Tuskegee Airmen, Inc. So you knew him or know him quite well.
Yes, absolutely.
He was a class before you?
Carter graduated relatively in 1942 approximately the fourth or fifth class behind the first class.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew him as an upperclassman. He, well, to tell you the truth, he was like an old man to me.
Mm-hmm.
You must understand, when we are 21 and 22, the difference of 2 or 3 years makes a heck of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in 1919. He's only 2 years older than me. But at the time, he had combat experience.
Right.
When I got there, I looked at him as God and Jesus. You bow down and you say, yes, sir.
Right.
He called me a dummy and yes, sir.
Now, with this kind of stature, what I notice in there, in just his background,
mm-hmm.
an honor student.
Absolutely.
Smacks in the face of what was being claimed that African Americans were ignorant and had no intelligence, and that was it. Was the whole test? If you would share with the listeners
that 1925 edition from the Army Air Corps, "How to Deal with Negroes," the 1925 said that Negroes were inept, they were childish, afraid of the dark.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be commanded by white officers.
Mm-hmm.
They were subject to crowd control. In other words, they were ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
It was an insult. Now, ironically, that report was in the face of the 369th out of New York, National Guard, black, World War I, fought in Germany against the Germans, never lost an inch of ground, tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
All the blacks have fought for this country ever since Civil War, in the Navy. They saved who went up San Juan Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Roosevelt and blacks to come and save him. But see, it was the racist attitudes of the Army Air Corps,
mm-hmm.
of the Army, in conjunction. Even the President Wilson, 1921, allowed the Ku Klux Klan to march up and down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
This was the thinking and the mode behind it. But we survived, even though under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with all of this, I look back at George Spankie Roberts, who commanded the 99th, and thinking, now, while I got you here, let's bring this thing forward. Now, I mm-hmm. went to see the movie Red Tail.
Oh, here we go.
And I will say to the listeners,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to ask you to give me your honest opinion. You're mm-hmm. going to do that anyway, which I admire. But I was sitting there, and I wanted to watch it.
All right.
And I did well up. There were some moments that I think back, and just the mere fact that the simple thought that we, as African Americans,
right.
we've been portrayed as not being American, but in fact,
right.
we are American, period. And whatever is said to, you know.
All right. Understandable.
To decrease or impact our standing, we have made great contributions to this country. But I watched that movie, and there were certain scenes that
mm-hmm.
I thought, great movie.
All right.
But I want you now, you were right. there, and you were a pilot, and tell us, share with us your insight of what you think about it.
Number one, first of all, you have to understand, it's a good movie
mm-hmm.
in terms of fire, action, Star Wars, planes, airplanes exploding, bullets hitting, great. It was exciting. It's a typical, just like a Western movie. You always have the action, and you have the heroes, then you have the despot,
mm-hmm.
and you have you got a little love, there's a little romance. But basically, when you think about it, it's a double standard. All of a sudden, the commanding officer is seen standing in a window watching the group go to combat, take off. The second in command stands around with a pipe in his mouth, and he tells him, send him off. He allows the gun to go off, and the guys take off, and they go to combat. Ironically, Colonel Davis flew more than 65 missions. He led the group in reality. Spanky Roberts, portrayed by Pipe Holder, flew more than 100 missions. The movie depicts the commanding officer and the leaders as standing by, allowing an alcoholic bum to lead the group into combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's an insidious personification down underneath. Same old myth that black men are incapable of leadership. They cannot make good decisions. They allow things to happen, allow men to break the laws and break the rules. And lightning, I hate the name because it depicts to me. See, I'm old-fashioned. I remember lightning, Stephen Fetchett.
Mm-hmm.
Always, oh, yes, a boss man, but he always breaks the laws, but he comes through.
Mm-hmm.
It's insidious. I've had a young man, after watching the movie with a bunch of children, ask me point blank, Colonel Jefferson, were you ever led by an alcoholic guy like Easy? What do you tell a young man today?
Mm-hmm.
I know that Red Tails has been projected as a great movie, and it's been projected. Well, we have an airplane, by the way, flying around the United States called the Red Tail. It's a Red Tail P-51 that's been reconstructed. And they're making great progress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, unfortunately, whoever wrote the story about Red Tails, well,
mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to get my tail in trouble, but I had said it. It's true. And I'll back it up.
Yeah, some of the scenes did. I on one hand, I was moved by some of the scenes.
Right.
And the other scenes, there's always going to be a clown,
absolutely
Scooby-Doo kind of black guy, you know, the one, whatever the character, the human character.
Right.
You're always going to have one.
Always.
They're always going to be presented as shucking and jiving, and
in the long run, he comes out as a hero because
right.
he's the guy that shoots down head on to ME-262,
right?
And he dies the hero, and they go to see his girlfriend, the Italian woman. Oh, it's so mournful. They meet her, and she falls in the guy's arms. So I feel my.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Wow, here we go again. The same old." Well,
but that situation, as I saw. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question.
Aloha, good morning, Carol. Thanks for having Mr. Alexander Jefferson on. I wanted to ask him, how would you encourage youth to keep a temperate rhythm? You've really kept a temperate rhythm throughout all the different parts and phases of being in the military, being black. How would you encourage young people to stand up for their uniqueness without turning towards violence and other things?
Well, no. Number one. We're Monday morning quarterbacking now. Number one, if you have a youth who's 10, 12, 14 years old, if you have not taught him who he is personally, his own worth, it's too late to try to convince him to be a man or a woman. Got to tell these young people, at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, get up off your knees and hustle. Respect your family. Respect your country. They've got to have it in them. Me? I'm too proud. Who tell me to go back to Africa? I knew who, when I was 8, 9, 10 years, I knew who I was. Period. And, it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you,
Carl.
All right. Hello. Yeah. One of the things is that as we grow up as African Americans, there's that extra added. We're taught we have to prove ourselves. Some people try to instill that.
No, this thing, we have to prove ourselves.
Right.
I'm so sick and tired of a white man or somebody else telling blacks that we have to prove ourselves up to a certain standard.
Right.
And they set the standard.
Right.
When we're already there.
We're already here. We're human, and we have the capabilities or the capacity. But there's that extra, even in today's world, the trickery that's about.
Trickery.
You look here in the media. Certain guys can get away with things.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no accountability. But if you dare made one misstep, and it doesn't have to be a misstep, it just has to not fit with the current agenda of political
regime. It's the double standard.
Mm-hmm.
The double standard.
And so I would say to young people, don't ever bother to having to prove yourself.
Heck no.
Just be yourself and be the best you can at what you do. And in doing that,
be the best you can.
But also, I've learned something that you got to care for the other fella, the other lady, the other person. You got to care about others because you can be, no man is an island.
That's right.
You got to learn to care about others because you can be as fancy and as fit and all of that, but if you don't show compassion toward others, that's what gives you that rudder in life, and you don't
always
step your bounds.
Basically, it's the respect for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Down on the inside, you've got to respect yourself in terms of your whole totality.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you automatically accept others, be you white, brown, green, purple,
mm-hmm.
culturally different, but you accept another human being for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be satisfied on the inside. Psychologically, you have to be understandable.
Mm-hmm. Now, 524-1080, this is the Carol Cox Show. I have my guest here, a very good guest, and I consider a friend, or
Mr.
Alexander Jefferson. And from Detroit is where you hail from,
Oh,
right?
My Lord, yes. Even the mayor went to jail. I say that jokingly because the guy was a nut. He was crazy. He had the world on a jug.
Yeah.
Mayor of Detroit. And then betrayed himself and lied. Mm-hmm. They got him on perjury.
Mm-hmm. And Well, yeah, and others like Corzine and all who lied and told stories, and we don't, you know, and nobody wants to touch him yet.
There you go.
It's talking about double standards.
That double standard here
right.
Again.
The revolving door. But how is it? What's the tapestry of the environment now for the modern day African American service man or woman?
The world is open to them.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here in Hawaii. In Honolulu, in touch with active duty at Hickam, Schofield, Wheeler, Kaneohe. Last night, went to Gospel Fest with Admiral Ponder,
mm-hmm.
Black. Oh, my God. Anyway, the field is open.
Mm-hmm.
The playing level, the playing field is leveled out.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell the young people, you have to be prepared. Nobody wants a dummy.
Mm-hmm.
Go to school. Get education. Last night, I had I always carry around with me, I don't have it here, a little... how much does education count? And it started off, here it is.
All righty. Go.
A non-graduate average. Now, this is some years ago. A non-graduate makes $700 a month.
Mm-hmm.
A high school graduate makes $1,300 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Some college makes $1,500 a month. An associate makes $2,000 a month. A bachelor's degree, $2,500 a month. You see, we go up.
Mm-hmm.
This is average income. Plus a doctorate on top, $5,000 a month. Does education count? You better believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the military. In fact, in the military, if you don't stay in school and, professional military education, whatever, PME. Mm-hmm. You have to go to school, become qualified to hold a position. Nobody wants a dummy. Mm-hmm. And the opportunities in the military are absolutely fantastic. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a leveling. It's a leveling agent of today.
Let's, speaking of myth, in this movie and in other writings, it portrays Tuskegee Airmen as being the first to accredit him with first shooting down the jet. Can you share with us what's your knowledge of that? Were the Tuskegee the first?
No. That was a myth that came about through some misunderstanding. The same thing as we never lost a bomber to German fighters. I've been participating in a research committee of the Tuskegee Airmen, the Harry Shepard Research Committee. And we have done research down at Maxwell Field. The Historical Society of Maxwell Field has all the records of the Air Force. And we have found out, we went through the missing the bomber reports.
Right.
When the bombers come back, they always have a report. And we've gone through the bomber reports, and we have found out that we've lost approximately. We went through 90% of these bomber reports. We have lost, while we were there, approximately 25 to 30 B-17s or B-24s out of the entire war.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The other groups, they're white groups, they lost tremendous numbers because attributed to the fact that the 332nd stayed with the bombers. Mm-hmm. And while we stayed with them, very seldom did the German fighters come in to try and shoot down the B-17s. Mm-hmm. I always reflect, when I came out through the briefing, you know, we go in for a briefing and tell you your course and the B-17 groups that you're supposed to escort and the time you met them and time you leave them. As you're going out the door, Colonel Davis is standing at the door looking you dead in the eye. Gentlemen, stay with the bombers. Now, we're sitting there over the bombers going to Germany, and somebody said, bogey's at 9 o'clock. You look out at 9 o'clock, at about 15 or 20 miles away, you see these little black specks going back and forth. As long as we stayed over the bombers, the German fighters never came in. I never shot my guns at a German fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Never had the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Now, watching this movie, Red Tail,
okay,
I could not avoid thinking about you, because this young man who was shot down... And I'm thinking, well, I know that Colonel Jefferson was, you were shot down.
I was shot down.
And what was this? I'm thinking, I know the story.
But I was not shot down by a German fighter.
Uh-huh.
I was shot down while strafing, where you go down and you pick up speed. We were supposed to knock out radar stations, shoot up the radar stations on the coast of southern France, right outside the city of Toulon. And as I went in, and by the way, I was tailing Charlie. I was the last guy to go across the target. 16 airplanes. I'm the last guy.
Trailing Charlie.
Tailing Charlie. And by that time, they zeroed in on me, and the shell came up through the floor. I pulled up off the deck. I was treetop height when I got hit.
Really?
Treetop. And I pulled up off the deck to get some altitude. And when I came out, parachute popped. I'm in the trees. It's close. Now, number one and number two in my flight, they got through, and they looked back, and they saw my airplane go in.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see me get out, so they thought I was killed. My parents got a KIA telegram.
Mm-hmm.
But when I hit the ground in the trees trying to get out the parachute, I heard this guy say, "Ach so, ja, Leutnant." I said, "Oh, hell, here we are." And a German enlisted man saw my gold bar on my collar, and he saluted me. Now, he was perplexed. Here I am coming up. Ah, yeah, Neger, Neger. I said, you calling me a nigger? I'd start fighting.
You wish you had your plane back in
there. You better believe it.
But so you were, they had their sights on you.
Oh,
sure. They had ample time to zero.
They knew there
was a follow-up, a duck shoot, basically.
And I went through 9 months in Germany as a prisoner of war.
Mm-hmm.
I was treated as an officer and a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
No beatings, no torture, because of Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm.
United States, Germany, and England had signed how you treat POWs.
Right.
You put the officers in a camp. Do not make them work. I set the war out. If I had been an enlisted man, they put in a separate camp. You could make the enlisted men work.
Mm-hmm.
But so I spent 9 months in Germany at Stalag Luft 3.
Mm-hmm.
Stalag means camp. Luft means air. It was controlled by the Luftwaffe. Luft means air.
Mm-hmm.
Waffe means army. W-A-F-F-E, pronounced Waffe.
Mm-hmm.
The Luftwaffe controlled the camp I was in, so they're politically a little bit more lenient.
Mm-hmm.
And due to the Geneva Convention, I did not work, like the rest of the guys. We sat the war out.
Did they seek any information from you, any water torture or water bore?
I did not know what the... number one, 1944, we did not know what the heck radar was.
Uh-huh.
He simply said it was some loud towers with some buildings, and you go over and you shoot the darn things up, period.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that the invasion of southern France came off 3 days later. Invasion of southern France, not northern, not Normandy.
Uh-huh.
This is southern France. I didn't know this. And strategically, I didn't know a doggone thing. I was simply flying a pilot.
So were you successful? You got shot down,
yeah.
That run that
We shot the heck out of it. That was only one. See, each other squadron had a different target along, one at Marseille,
mm-hmm.
one at Montpellier. We were at Toulon. Somebody else was at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
We knocked the heck out of those radar stations. Now, the radar, by the way, I learned later, the radar controlled the guns shooting out to sea. And these ships coming across the horizon were controlled by these radar guns. We shot up the radar guns so that he couldn't control the guns against the invasion later on.
Mm-hmm.
See, ironically, I was simply a pilot following orders.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to Stalag Luft 3, there were 10,000 white officers who had been shot down over German-occupied territory. Every time a B-17 goes down, you go up four officers.
Mm-hmm.
Pilot, co-pilot, navigator, bombardier. Some days they lost 55 B-17s. Go back the next day, lose 75 to 100. That's out of the 8th Air Force from England.
Mm-hmm.
15th Air Force coming up from Italy, losing 25 or 30 B-17s. The camp had 10,000 white officers in the camp when I got there in August 1944.
Wow.
Now, the enlisted men were in a different camp.
Mm-hmm.
Every B-17 had six enlisted men. They lost a heck of a lot of men.
So that was a way of collecting prisoners.
That's right.
Shoot a bomber, and you had yourself a good catch for
the day. Attrition rate among the Army Air Corps was tremendous. They lost more men killed in the air war. More men were killed over Germany and England, France, than the Marines lost in World War II. I don't have the particular figures, but mm-hmm. tremendous numbers, tremendous numbers.
Now, during that time you're serving in prison
mm-hmm.
as a prisoner of war, you wrote a book.
Well, yes.
And the name of the book is?
Red Tail Captured,
mm-hmm.
Red Tail Free.
Mm-hmm.
Put out by the Fordham University Press.
Mm-hmm.
Available through Amazon or through me.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Now, how would one get in touch with you? Because you did some, during your stay in prison,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
did some scribbling of some caricatures and what have you. And
yeah.
What Is there any of that available? And how do people contact you?
Either email or telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Email Alex Jeff. See, my name is Alexander Jefferson. So Alex Jeff 01
mm-hmm.
at Juno.com. I took Alex Jeff at Juno.com and it loaded up with spam. So now I'm on Alex Jeff 01. When it loads up with spam, I'll go to Alex Jeff 02.
Typical pilot.
You better believe it. And it works. It works.
Thinking ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, that's it. One of the things I share with the listeners, I look forward to receiving your emails. They're always educational. And, you know, I really, when I look, I got 3-4 emails today, and the content is always stimulating, always educational. And where do you come up with this? I wanted to ask you, where do you sit around looking for the smart
things? I have some friends who do a tremendous amount of research.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come up with these emails that are fantastic, I can't think of them right now, but they're mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
They're mind-boggling. But I wish I had a copy of... They make you think.
Oh.
They keep you alive.
Yeah.
They make you think. And
here's one you sent the other day. Is one person's response on Facebook after the State of the Union speech, January 24th. My president, and this here. I'm going to let you read this because immediately when I received it, I thought this is Alex for sure. You talked in the red there.
My president. Oh, number one, he got Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
Check. Number two, unemployment rate is 8.3%. Check. Number three. 1.6 million jobs created with no GOP. What's the GOP? Gross opposite. Yeah. No help.
No help from GOP.
Yeah, sorry. A million jobs created. Now, by the way, the president has held Rush Limbaugh and everybody else, Mitt, holding him dire responsible. But all of these things are happening. Look here. 22 months of job and economic growth with no help. Number five, he ended the war in Iraq. Think about this thing. Number, not a tax hike in 3 years. All of these are positive things happening for the country.
Mm-hmm.
Still carries 80% of the black vote. Yes. Oh, but Lord have mercy. Same wife for 15 years with no extramarital effects.
Well, that's critical today with the Republicans or others,
right.
and also Democrats. Yeah, what was it, Bill Clinton?
and all the rest of it. He saved the auto industry and 1.5 million jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so
this is tremendous.
And they're not all about the president, Obama. But it is quite enlightening, and it gets you thinking. And
it's about the economy and the world and the safety of America. Things mm-hmm. happening positively for America.
Mm-hmm.
And he's simply been insulted. Insulting to have someone from the floor of the Senate call out loudly, quote, liar.
Yeah.
It's an insult.
Yeah. Well, a lot is to be fleshed out with this situation, and I think I don't like to defend him because I have concern. For example, the Patriot Act. I wish that he had signed that, killed it.
Yes.
I wish that he had gone to Abu Ghraib and gotten rid of it.
Got rid of it.
Stuck to some of his hope and change efforts. A lot of the times people think that because you're black and you support him, it's but, a crime to support him because he's African American.
No.
That goes along with the same thinking about the movie. We are shuck and jive. We're always loose, but we have standards.
I've got standards. Some of the things the president has done, great. Other things, I don't go along with him.
Mm-hmm.
Economically or politically, I have my own things, and let's face it.
But I in the next hour, you're going to hang with me, I hope.
All right.
And we're going to be talking about several things, and one of which you're, by the way, I don't know if you, are you still 19, or are you actually telling your actual age now?
Tell everybody I was born in 1921. Carter, Herb Carter's 2 years older than me.
And he's 94.
He's not.
He's not.
He's
92. So you're 90 now.
Yeah, that's right.
You look. If I could look like you at 90, or if I could look like you at 65.
So I tell everybody, it's what you inherit. It's your genes.
Yeah.
See, my mother died at 98. All of her relatives, all of her brothers and sisters were in their 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was 110. So if I don't drink too many martinis, maybe I'll make 100,
yeah.
I hope.
And are you still lifting the Mai Tais?
Over to Barefoot Bar, down at the Helicoa every
right.
now and then.
That's your favorite hangout.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to come back, and I'm going to be talking about yesterday's news, and you were here, and you read a story talking about
Car
was a racial slur.
Car was vandalized.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it was, one of the things, we've become so sensitive that it's the N-word, and so everyone is so afraid of the N-word that it invites anything now, because we're so sensitive and scared, but we're going to break that ice next hour and talk about that incident. And I hope that you, the listeners, if you did read the article, go Google it. It was in the Star Advertiser regarding a car deface, and the allegations were it was a hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
I have information and specifics that will change you're thinking and ask the question, what were they thinking?
In other words, this is going to be debatable.
But the information that I have and the solid mm-hmm. facts and the statements by speaking directly to the, quote, victim.
Right.
Speaks completely different of what the article presented.
Okay.
And here in Hawaii, there is hatred in everywhere, but I can tell you, I have not experienced it as mm-hmm. that article portrayed it. And I'm a very sensitive and thin kind of skin guy.
Okay.
So we'll be back shortly, and this is the Carol Cox Show. See you.
For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, good morning again and aloha. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. My guest, and I'm honored to have him to stay in with me here, is retired Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson, and Tuskegee Airmen, and
yes.
I'm always honored, and I'll say it over and over, and when I'm around or about you folks, I'm always moved, and it's a good feeling that I get. So
thank you, buddy.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for getting me here.
Now, I by the way, those of you out there, this is Black History Month, while I don't, as you know, you can look at me and tell that I'm of African descent. It's not no big question, and I sometimes vocalize that and verbally, and you probably can in some of the things I say and my leanings and what have you. But while being me, I also have to understand that, you know, in this day and age, like in the old days, it was hatred.
Of course.
There's discrimination,
still
racism, and all in all, sexism and all. And hopefully in my lifetime that we see where all people, regardless of their sexual orientation, their religious orientation, we can live as one, which is asking a lot the way we're behaving today. But I think it's doable. But what I wanted to do is to talk about a story that appeared yesterday's Star Advertiser, where the allegations are a young man, his car, his private car, had been, the tires were flattened.
Vandalized.
Yeah, and spray painted with the N-word. Now, I'm going to post the pictures up at carolcox.com, and for those of you that are sensitive and will throw up at the word, the real word, then my apologies. But if you understand, I can't be asked to share facts and then tiptoe around everything and become so fragile and sensitive that we can't call it what it is. So those of you that are, we're going to post this entire story that I did yesterday, some of the investigations. So why did I go and take an interest in this story? Well, let me set the stage. It was not simply because I read an article in the newspaper. Let me explain to you that on February the 23rd of this year, I received a letter from Mr. Alfonso Braggs, president of the NAACP Hawaii branch. Now, this is a letter, and I'm not going to read it all, but throughout the hour, I will read some. It's just a short letter. Aloha, NAACP family and friends. This past weekend, we had two reported incidents of racial tagging of private vehicles in Honolulu. Right there is enough to catch you, and it caught my attention. Not the normal. Some of you may have seen the picture of the vehicle parked near the school with the, quote, N-word spray-painted across the entire passenger side. Additionally, all four tires were slashed, ensuring the vehicle could not be driven. Ironically, a similar incident occurred in the same area last month. Tonight, I met with the owner of the vehicles to discuss the case and offer support. I also met with the Honolulu Police Department to ensure that police reports had been filed on these hate crimes. And let's underscore that. This is Mr. Braggs describing this. It was first vandalism or tagging, racial tagging. Keep those words in mind, the buzzwords. Racial tagging, and then it also is the hate crimes. This is how he's characterizing it. I have been advised by advised that detectives have been assigned to investigate the cases. The vehicle parked near the school is covered and will be moved in the next few days. I plan to follow up with the owners of the development to address safety and security of the residents and their property. I will also follow up with the authorities regarding getting these hate crimes now. Now, keep in mind, he's done no investigation, but he's characterized them as hate crimes, and which is his prerogative. He says getting these hate crimes investigated and over to the prosecutor's office for disposition. Please be careful not to unintentionally promote this hateful behavior through sensationalism and extra publicity. Rather, let our focus be on support for the victim and call for swift justice. Mahalo for caring and taking a stand for justice and equality. Yours in the struggle. After receiving this letter, folks, my head was bleeding because I was pulling my hair out and trying to scratch to figure out what's the intent of this letter. What's the purpose? Well, then after I lost maybe 2 or 3 pints of blood from bleeding and thinking aloud and not being able to arrive, other than the letter itself was incendiary and took the liberty of drawing conclusion on his own. This is Mr. Braggs. While not citing any specific facts and surreptitiously moving about around the N-word. So, in other words, the letter didn't meet the test, in my opinion, based on what hatred is. And so I surmise and thought, well, maybe it's this type of thing. If the same individual's cars have been attacked in the last couple of months, what's the probability or the likelihood that one individual's cars and amongst many other cars would get tagged and painted and sprayed with the word, the N-word, and then it becomes a hate crime? They just don't match. So I went over and was able to meet with and speak with some of the people in the complex. Now, mind you, I'll say up front, in case I miss it or we get distracted, and if you want to call in and share your thoughts, I saw the emails on the news article, the comments section, and I was bothered by that because in Hawaii, there are problem people, and we, let's admit, this is a nation that has been taken from the people that rightfully own it, mm-hmm. and they are illegally or what have you, they're not getting the justice that they deserve. So I'm not going to tell you hatred and wrongdoings and based on race or ethnicity doesn't exist here, but this case didn't come anywhere near it. So I want to tell you right up front, I believe, in case I don't get the chance to say it later, I believe that Mr.
Choney.
Alfonso Braggs, the president of the NAACP, and I wrote him an email and asked him to give me a call to discuss this. I believe he, Mr. Braggs, and the NAACP owe the people of this state an immediate apology. An immediate apology. Nothing short of that, number one. And the Honolulu Police Department, he should give the Honolulu Police Department an apology. Period. No conditions. Second and thirdly, the supporters of the NAACP should be apologized to. And he should offer his resignation immediately. And I think I can state the case. And if there's anybody out there that want to say that I'm picking on him or I should take this in the back room and deal with it because it's a, quote, black issue, this is about a human issue. This is about when we project, while claiming to protect one person, we project on an entire community that they hate blacks and whatever, and that's nothing to do with this. It doesn't even come near portraying what the real truth is in this situation. And this was an act of vandalism, to quote the individual victim who said, "I was approached by Mr. Braggs, and I told him I did not want to participate in this. I was not a martyr. This was a simple matter. I have insurance. It was nothing more than vandalism." He couldn't tell if it was an African American or Mexican American or Japanese or anyone who did this. So how could he? This is the victim saying, how could he characterize it or quantify it as a hate crime? Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question?
Yes, Carol. This is, you there?
Yes, I am.
This is Bruce. We talked some time ago. Is that gentleman still there, brother, still there in the studio with you?
Yes, he is.
Ask him, Mark, because I just called my cousin, and she lives next door to C.I. Williams?
Yeah, C.I. in Cincinnati.
Oh, no, Dayton.
Dayton. Yeah, Dayton. Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio, yes. And I told him that... Your last name was Jefferson?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Jefferson. And she told me to ask you, sir, do you know about the incident that happened in Indiana?
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
Freemanville.
Freemanville?
Freemanville.
Freeman.
Freemanville?
Field. Freeman. Airfield. Freemanville.
Yes, yes.
Where 100 officers were arrested for literally refusing to sign their name.
Yeah, did they say something about impersonating officers or something like that?
No, they weren't. They were.
I mean, but that was a legend or accusation or something like that? I'm not sure.
The controversy was going into the officers' club at Freemanville, Indiana.
Okay, right. Yeah.
And the colonel, white colonel, put before them a letter. He made a regulation. 55, oh, God, I remember. But anyway, the letter said that African-American officers would not go into the officers' club. Right. And they were supposed to sign their name, indicating that they had read his letter. They refused to sign their names.
Okay.
Now, during war, refusing to follow a direct order. Mm-hmm. That's Article 15 or whatever it is, which is death. Think about it. Here you are, refusing to go into the officers' club, and the colonel puts in front of you a letter saying that you're not supposed to go into it and you're supposed to sign it, admit it. 100 officers were arrested, sent from Freemanville back to Godmanville under guard. And when they got back to Godmanville, placed in barracks, surrounded by barbed wire, and the German POWs walking by laughing at them. Freemanville, Godmanville, 1945. Mm-hmm. Three of them were convicted. No, one was convicted of a felon, failure to follow direct order. And Roger Terry, he was a felon, stayed on his record. He could not pass the bar in Los Angeles, California, because he was a felon. I believe Clinton or somebody rescinded all of these reprimands in 1995 or something, and his $150 fine was returned without interest.
Okay, Bruce. Okay,
yeah. All right, thank you.
Is your mom, she lives there in Indiana?
My mom?
Mm-hmm.
No, I got a sister living in Gary, but
right.
my mother, who's also, my dad passed away. Both my mom and my dad were World War II veterans.
Mm-hmm.
My dad passed away, but my mom now living in a VA home care center there in Dayton, and I've been trying to get her with the curator up there in Idaho, who's where she went to boot camp yeah. to get it there.
Was she a pilot or what was?
No, my mom was a WAC.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
CI is there in Dayton.
Dayton, yes, sir. And my cousin, I just called my cousin, confirmed. Mm-hmm. She's going to see him next week. She lives right next door to her.
Good.
Right door down.
Yeah, CI was my upperclassman. He graduated approximately two or three months ahead of me. Yeah.
Okay. I'll call her back and make a mention. I'll talk with
Well, you. Have her to call. You can have her to call here if she'd like to speak to Colonel Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's back in the mainland, my cousin.
Well, that's what they make long distance.
I understand.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. She just got in from church, so.
I know. Okay, I'm teasing
Bruce. Later, no. Maybe next time.
Okay, I'm
thanks,
teasing.
Thanks, sir, for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you much.
Hello.
Absolutely.
Take it.
I love this format. You called up, you're going to be talking and just change because it's. I'm attempting to have it as people.
There you go.
People, not entertainment.
This is
when
fantastic.
It stopped being fun, I won't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. But as I was saying on with this situation here, so I let my listeners know that I went to speak to people that live in that complex, and this is the account that, assumed, and I carefully make that assumption until I can get other information. But I was told by people that live there that on one occasion that they believe and knew that it was about a lover spat, issue where a woman, a third party being a female, and there's two males, and when testosterone's flow.
It was a personal thing.
And they observed a female getting out of the quote, victim's car on an occasion a while back, and another gentleman pulled up behind them and approached this gentleman and started thrashing, and they damaged the neighbor's car, in fact, and had to pay for that. And so they believe. And they spoke very highly of this young man, and I met him too, and he is a very good person. And he, being the, quote, victim, as Mr. Braggs has presented him, was completely in opposition to anything that Mr. Braggs had done with this. He said Mr. Braggs came to his home, sat there for a couple of hours, and he told Braggs that this was not a hate crime. He did not want to file anything. He did not want to be involved in. He didn't want to be a martyr. He didn't want, as he put it, quote, he didn't want it to be an Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson situation.
Oh, here we are.
He felt that he didn't want to embarrass his neighbors and having everybody coming through, and that this entire process was manufactured by Mr. Braggs. Now, Mr. Braggs, if you want to take challenge to this, you're welcome to call in, or I'll invite you next week to come on. But the facts are there, and I've preserved this gentleman's comments, and he also allowed me, so that I won't try and conceal anything from anyone, during the conversation, he telephoned Mr. Braggs while in my presence and to confirm what he had shared with me prior to speaking to Mr. Braggs. He called Mr. Braggs and engaged in conversation, and where he repeatedly told Braggs and reminded Braggs that, number one, he as a victim never felt it was a hate crime, reiterating that it couldn't be a hate crime because he didn't even know who it was. So how, therefore, could we conclude or classify or characterize it as a hate crime? He did not want to the NAACP to do anything on his behalf, because if they did, he wouldn't be here anyway, because he would be deployed or leaving the islands for an extended period. And so, therefore, he wouldn't be here to testify if there was something, if Mr. Braggs, so he asked Mr. Braggs not to. And this is all I'm privy to this conversation as he's talking on speakerphone. And you will be shocked at Mr. Braggs' comments. Basically, to say to you that in this process and in this conversation, it was quite clear that this was an effort, Mr. Braggs, and I won't say the NAACP, I will reserve that, but Mr. Bragg, being the president of the Hawaii branch, basically shared with this gentleman, it wasn't about him. It was about the occasion, the early occasion, where the police had supposedly not done anything. So I know the Honolulu Police Department. I know that while we may be disappointed in some of the things as an armchair quarterback or, you know, Monday morning quarterback, but the police department here, I think they could give classes to everybody. We just had one here die just the other day giving assistance to a motorist whose car had stalled. So they don't have time to play games with this. And so this effort on the part, as described by the quote victim, this was manufactured by Braggs to characterize and then to go out. And I go back to the original letter that Braggs sent me. If you wanted to keep it quiet and no sensationalism, why would you go to the newspaper and print, have the newspaper to do an article? And then the children, and I do apologize. I understand the sensitive aspect of and the nature of having children walk by and see the word scrawl on the side of a car. I, too, would be offended and think that that. But it just didn't rise to the occasion. And so when they go to Braggs, went and met with the management, he indicated to the young man. And the young man said, I didn't want you to do that. You didn't have to go on my behalf. I have no problems. I have an insurance for my cars, as they did last time. The insurance took care of the, quote, vandalism. And so, therefore, I don't need your assistance in this. I don't want your assistance in this. I don't want to be involved. I don't want my name involved. I don't want to be associated with it. And Braggs, in that conversation, went on to tell him that it was about these people who don't understand. So here's my opinion and my conclusion. It's a terrible misstep on the part of Braggs. Based on what not I think and what I've concluded based on reading, but based on his own words in that conversation. Now, some of you might be silly enough to call me up and say, well, I shouldn't have been eavesdropping, and did he know? Well, I'll say then you should go get a law degree and protect Braggs. But we are here as a community. When we see our own act up, we must straighten them up. Am I right? You know, we must do that. We cannot allow this behavior. And when you say a hate crime, what happened when we really do experience a real hate crime? You've ostracized the police department. The police department, if you look at their makeup, they wouldn't have time. They wouldn't have to come up with the kind of hatred that this gentleman tried to portray in saying that by them being the police department, quote, dragging their feet or what have you and not doing anything, they were perpetuating the hatred. I'm here to tell you that we must proceed with caution on this one. It never happened, and I base that statement on the victim, the, quote, victim's own remarks and willingness and begging and pleading of Braggs not to involve him in that, telling him it was simply vandalism. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Cox, for taking my call. I think you're absolutely right. I don't believe it was a hate crime because there are other Afro-American individuals who parked in the same area. They didn't have their vehicles painted with that word. Mm-hmm. Didn't have their terror flash. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was someone who was just out to, you know, make a negative racial statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank you for the investigative work that you did to balance this out and you know, bring it to the forefront to basically what it was, just vandalism directed toward one individual. And I also want to thank Lieutenant Alexander, I forgot his last name, for his service.
Yeah.
And I apologize, I'm getting kind of of an age, too. I'm 68. I was, I think, 1 year old.
Can you do me a favor to let this young man know that 68 is no need to be complaining about being old?
Heck no.
Yes, sir.
Did you hear how old he said he was?
Yeah, he's in his 90s.
And did you hear him? Did you hear him complain about it?
No, but you know, I know something about the Tuskegee Airmen,
mm-hmm.
and the P-51 Mustangs that are flying. And I want to ask him, did he fly the first version with the Rolls Royce? I think engines that were like really kind of underpowered.
No.
And how did he overcome that advantage of fighting with the Messerschmitts?
The first P-51s came out with. Allison engine. Allison engines did not have a supercharger. So
yes,
above 12,000 feet, they were no good. With the Merlin, the Rolls-Royce Merlin came out in the 51, the C, the 51C, the Razorback, that darn thing could go up to 32,000 feet. It was fantastic. In fact, I was shot down out of a C, the Razorback.
Oh,
I see.
Then the bubble canopy came out later on. That was the bubble canopy was the D model, the P-51D.
Mm-hmm.
But fantastic machine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, from, not to talk over you, but from what I've read, the crews of the B-17s were glad to have you folks riding shotgun for them.
Oh, yes.
And they were extremely happy. So, you know, thanks a lot for standing up, and especially during that era, to be the type of person, you know, that loves this country but wouldn't be mistreated by certain individuals
country
as being, you know, someone that was below, you know, human. And you proved in your fellow comrades, proved, and even in the Army, the ones that fought on the ground, and even the Japanese soldiers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, all the minorities who fought and who discriminated against themselves, you know, to help save this country and other countries, you know. My hat goes off to you. I thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The airplanes and all of that. I just read last week, I think, and maybe earlier. Last week, I read earlier that there was the Asian community was complaining about discrimination in the military.
Absolutely, the 442nd, Japanese Americans.
And then today also present. And what if I could say anything to anybody. If you witness an act of racism, an act of discrimination,
speak up.
Don't look at the other fella and go, well, that group of people are just thin skin and always complaining. And, you know, that's all they do is affirmative action issues and complain. And, you know, I really wouldn't hire one of them, because if you hire one, they're going to file a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is that to anybody out there, whether you black, blue, green, Asian,
purple,
Hawaiian, whatever, if you witness racism or discrimination in any fashion, whether regarding sex or religion,
that's right,
you'd better speak out, because if they're on that guy's doorstep today and they succeed, they'll be on your doorstep tomorrow, projecting the same pains.
What is that famous? They went for the Jews, they went for the... these and went for those,
mm-hmm.
and I stood by.
Yeah.
And now today they're after me, and there's no one to help me.
Yeah,
that's right.
And we know better than that. We can act up, and we that goes back to the early hour where I say we must start caring about the other person, and in doing so, we will have no problem strapping on guns, so to speak, metaphorically. And going and putting up a fight for that person, because if you stare hatred in the eyes and look it down, stare it down,
then
you're going to have containment. But if you let it run freely,
it's going to come back at you.
Right. Because it's just looking for a host. That's all it's looking for. It's not looking...
Well, today, if you don't support the cause for women, women are the ones who, today... what's the average? On the average, a woman only makes 75% of what a white male.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't stand up for the rights of women, then you don't stand up for your own rights down the line, politically, economically. Another great debate, whether we should support abortion. That's a question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get into it. Between religion, supporting contraceptives, all of these things, you have to take a stand. You have to take a stand.
Mm-hmm. Well, big government doesn't want, as they say, but I want to... a little bit more on this this incident with the tagging of the car. What's your take on this?
Tell you the truth, I'd like to know. Well, see, trying to understand the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Tony says it's not a hate crime because there's more to the problem. There's more evidence in his understanding. And I think what we should have done in the first place, listen to Mr. Tony.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else behind it, and it's hard for me to give an opinion. It's like walking in the dark. I don't know what in the heck's going on.
Right. And if he is the victim, then how can someone come along and tell him, oh, no, this is what it is, and he's saying, no,
exactly.
It's not. I have insurance.
Exactly.
I don't need any help.
Exactly.
My insurance is going to take. It's not a police matter.
Exactly.
And by the way, Bragg's comments and statements in the letter that he sent to me, he said he had gone to the police and made sure the complaints were filed or what have you. The gentleman had already filed complaints. And as he indicated to Bragg's on the phone, I have filed complaints in the past, and I know how to file them, and I file them on this current situation. So he was put out. And unfortunately, what is happening now, this will spill over into... He has to report it to the base.
Yes.
Because, and it's not his doing, it's the doing of Bragg's, who sat and gave comment and made it
a racial
issue. So this is something we have to be guarded against, too, you know, because we can inflict injury on ourselves by trusting in, quote, certain leaders, or I don't know if that would be the appropriate. And what I would say, for me, the NAACP has played a role in my life for years, and it will still continue. But when we find someone that's behaving in such a fashion, I'm going to call them out because I know the impact and the capacity and the influences that the NAACP, if operated properly, will have on these issues of social justice or injustices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with this, I'm not going to try to create an argument here, because I can assure you, if you would just trust me, I have preserved these comments quite well, the conversation with the so-called victim, and Mr. Bragg's, and the language and the statements made by Mr. Bragg's, I think all of you would agree wholeheartedly that this was not the proper time or the place, and this behavior is unacceptable. We cannot have someone falsely labeling this community, this state, or the people of this state as bigots or racists when, in fact, it was an act of vandalism. And the person that received the impact is saying just that. It was an act of vandalism, but the NAACP leader is saying, no, it was a hate crime. And that, my friend, I did call the newspapers, and they're culpable. I call and left a message, and you would think that they would have called me back and asked to correct these issues or what was presented in that article, or spoke to the other issues where I would have provided them, and they could have asked this gentleman to speak out on it, but they didn't. So I'd like to wait and see, now that they let the cat out the bag, or so to speak, with this, quote, hate crime article, I just think that they should be more careful in writing and printing, unless they were to get all of the facts, and they owe it to us, because writing an incendiary document or article and then leaving it for us to hash out will only serve to make things worse in this community, and it portrays good people as being bad, and some of the residents of that community where this incident supposedly happened, they are simply shocked that of the recklessness, as they describe it, that of Mr. Bragg's comments and the representation, because they know the individual whose car was attacked. And this gentleman said that one of the original, it was only one other that he had, and that car sat there for 2 weeks, and no one raised an issue, and it was taken care of by his insurance. And clearly, again, as a friend of mine said, young men chasing the girls, things go wrong, and it should be dealt with that. It wouldn't be needed. The NAACP does not need to go and engage in prescribing, describing things what they were not, as this young man said. It is not what the NAACP, Alfonso Bragg, had represented. This is this young man's words, in essence. So, anyway, I'd like to know if any of you got any comments on this, or because what I read yesterday on the comment section on the newspaper, I thought to myself, now I see how lynchings can occur. Mm-hmm. All you need is one authority, one individual with standing in the community to show up and utter a word that will trigger a reaction by a crowd or a mob. And again, you can go to Carol at carolcox.com to send me an email, carroll@carolcox.com, or you can go to the website and see what I've written in greater details and some of the pictures at carolcox.com. So anyway, that's the long and short of that. And anything you want to share with us, Alex?
Nope.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it right there.
Yeah.
All
so,
we got to do is go back and do a little more investigation and find out and talk to Mr. Tony.
Yeah.
Because he's the guy who should be, his words should be should have been followed, but.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But didn't want to give those names, didn't
no.
So
no.
That is one of the things when you're doing an investigation. You think, well, you want me to digest and consume what it is you've written,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
you don't give me any information to offer as a check and balance.
Right. Exactly.
Who? What's his name? Where does he live?
Exactly.
You've had contact with him. Are we to just accept what you say?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the making
right.
and shaping of a story. You shape it the way you want it to. So anyway, that's so much for that. And on another front, the Hickam contaminants issue, I'm going to be talking about that. This coming week, Monday, I should have the test results of the soil. And since I've spoken on air regarding this story, I have now tracked another site that is contaminated that was taken off of Hickam. And believe it or not, folks, it just sits out there breathing and waving to the wind and back of churches and preschools. And there are others, and we're going to find them. And hopefully through this process, we will be able to encourage the Department of Health to go back to the original EALs, environmental action levels, and refuse to raise them again, and also meet with these people, charge them, make them clean up their mess. And I'm going to try and get Mr. Walter Chan on next week, I was stalling this week because I didn't have all of the results, and I will be having that, and we're still doing tests on the other soils, and there are other sites that I will be trying and to talk to the contractors. But believe it or not, people were buying soil to use in their gardens, and the truckers and the people that were sending it knew or know that it is contaminated. You figure that one out, and then I'll give you a cup of tea. But something's wrong there. But anyway, Alex,
yeah.
On, you mentioned mm-hmm. a guy to me about earlier, Rush Limbaugh. You've been around. You're a level-headed person, and you've been above and beyond.
Sometimes I wonder, Carol. Sometimes I wonder.
Share with me and the listeners your take on this. Is it justified, this behavior, the rhetoric that goes about it? What do you think?
Number one, I realize politically it's the normal hatred or the rupture between political parties. You listen to the Republicans biting each other right today. Romney is biting Mitt Romney.
Santorum.
The debate back and forth. If the president were to be 100% right in some issue,
mm-hmm.
automatically, as a Republican, you have to find something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If it were to give every person in this country $100 free without any backbone, any debt, the Republicans would have to find something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if God and Jesus, they'd have to find something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obama has been a fantastic president. You have to find something wrong, even if he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He bailed out the big three, saved millions of jobs, hundreds of jobs. You've got to find him wrong. I don't give a time. General Motors has now come back. Ford has come back. They paid back all the money. Chrysler has paid back, well, possibly all the money. But politically, he's got to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead.
That's all part of the political system.
What is, in this entire process, you've been around and you've been under several presidents
mm-hmm.
and first ladies. Have you ever had the occasion or recall anyone ever talking about the first lady spending money on dresses?
Never. Never.
Have you ever?
Never.
Have you ever heard?
First time you had a black woman in the White House, and quite naturally, everything she does has to be examined politically, minutely. You have to find fault with it.
Mm-hmm.
Most fantastic woman in the world. Never.
And what about the actual? This gentleman. I got to refrain from calling him a gentleman. This harsh man. Of Glenn Beck, who I heard him say to the first lady, back this butt up, but he used the A word.
Ah. Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry. I don't know what that have to do with politics or one's stance on
it's
politics.
It's insidious racist.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you can freely hear
it. I'm not going to say it. But it's an insult.
Yeah.
It's an insult.
In your time, have you ever recalled, recall ever any first lady or any president have to endure the airwaves, the
trash? No president has ever endured from the floor of the Senate some Republican or some white Republican yelling out, quote, liar,
mm-hmm.
unquote. It's an insult to be held up from the floor of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
There may be other instances. He's insulted as a black man, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom issue.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've been insulted for 150 years, same old thing.
Now, you gave great time. Mm-hmm. You served as a prisoner of war in the Tuskegee Airmen. All these things that you fought for your country, did you think you would ever see an African American? And if you did you think as president, and did you think that he would receive?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through so much. 1948, President Truman had the guts enough to sign 98, 90, whatever it was, to desegregate the military.
Mm-hmm.
I lived through the Civil Rights Movement. Rosa Parks, I lived through 1954 when Brown versus the Board of Education, educational system was overturned. I've lived through Johnson with the Civil Rights Movement, voting rights. I've lived through Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was victimized and idolized as opposing Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, he was right, absolutely true, in opposing Vietnam. I lived through Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm said, freedom, ballots of bullets, freedom. I've lived through Jesse Jackson. That's A or B, but let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things, and now, lo and behold, and listening to Martin Luther King at Memphis, when he went to Memphis in support of garbage men, trying to get a decent salary.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to the mountaintop. I may not be there with you, but we as a people will get there to the mountaintop. Lo and behold, President Obama is part of the mountaintop.
Mm-hmm.
The military, blacks in the military, blacks in civilian life, doctors, lawyers, it's all part of getting to the mountaintop. And we have more to go. This is only the beginning.
Yeah.
This is only the beginning.
Yeah, we have a long way to go still.
Oh, yes.
Because there's digression. And,
oh, yes.
And I had asked you the last time, do you have any idea of inoculating the kids from a low underwear or exposed underwear
yes.
crises?
My attitude. Education, folks, education. Kids, stay in school. Nobody wants a dummy.
Mm-hmm.
Become part of the system. You never, by the way, you never join a baseball game with football rules.
Mm-hmm.
I tell children, we live our lives in a game. Today, educationally, politically, it's a game. You're earning money. Culturally, it's a game. Learn the game, learn the rules of how to exist in the United States of America. Become part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Vote. You do not break down barriers standing on the outside, throwing rocks up against a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to get on the inside, become part of the system. Learn how to say, Mr. Chairman, I move. You become part of the system. Politically, vote. Become a neighborhood representative. Neighborhood association. Be part of the system to make the laws.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to say, this is my country, it's part of me, and move.
Mm-hmm.
Tell young people, get off your knees and hustle. Don't sit back. Be productive.
So you leave here Wednesday and you'll be back next year, I'm sure.
The good Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
Yeah.
I shall return next February 2013.
And you've been coming here now for how many years?
20 years.
20 years.
We started, Tuskegee Airmen started coming during February. There were 15 or 20 of us with our wives and girlfriends. And today, I just lost old Bill Holloman last year. So very few of us can come, mm-hmm. but we'll be here next year.
Now, there is a new chapter, and I thought the young lady would accompany us.
Absolutely.
There's a new chapter of the Tuskegee Airmen here in Honolulu.
Here in Honolulu.
And is there any contact information on it? She was missing in action. I was hoping that she would be here to share with us and give us...
Master Sergeant Marcus.
Uh-huh. Well, what I'll do, we'll reach out for them and have them give me a call, and we'll run something.
We'll run something down. Yeah. I don't have that information in front of me.
Okay, but there is a new...
A brand new chapter here in Honolulu.
And what does that chapter do? What happens with that that organization?
Number one, we take in new members. You need not be a Tuskegee Airman, but you join the chapter, pay your dues, and basically... learn the history of Tuskegee Airmen and the impact it had on the military. You also become aware of the rest of the military. Be able to convert to young people and to the rest of the world the history of the military in the United States of America and the effect it's had on laws and the country.
Mm-hmm.
Learn the place of the Tuskegee Airmen in our society, and be able to impact young people. That's the main idea.
Mm-hmm. What we'll do is I'll get the information, I'll post it up, and hopefully those out there that will be getting some airtime and exposure and have that done, because it's a good organization. It's preserving history and perpetuating it and getting it out there.
That's it, exactly.
Are you still going up and flying? You don't fly yourself anymore.
Oh, no, I don't fly myself.
But are you always eager to... Are you going to go up in the ultralight that the gentleman normally takes?
Had a ball.
You did it this trip, too?
Yeah, last Sunday. Last week. The guy said, hey, Jeff, you want to go fly? I said, heck yes. Went out to Dillingham and got an ultralight. That's where you have a little seat. He's
right.
Sitting in front with an engine behind you. And we circled Pearl Harbor at 200 feet over the Big Mo, the Arizona, Ford Island, and the submarines. Then went up over the, out of the ocean and looked, saw the whales.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Wow.
Golly. Then went up to Dillingham and landed. Then got in a glider. Cessna pulls the glider up to 3,000 feet. Turns you loose. Then you glide over the mountains and get a lift. And go back over the ocean, right close by, but quarter mile. Look down and watch the turtles and watch the whales back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful surf. Go back over the mountains, get another lift with the air. Carol is fantastic.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm envious. And thank you again for joining me. My guests have been Mr. Lieutenant Colonel retired Alexander Jefferson, Tuskegee Airman. And again, anytime, and maybe we're going to have to try a call in one day from back there. And
beautiful.
I'd like to have a couple of on, and we'll coordinate it.
So, as you say, let's run the flag up the pole and see how it flies.
Okay, let's do that. Well, thank you again, and I really appreciate it, and I hope the listeners enjoyed it.
I've had a ball.
Okay, thank you.
I've had a ball.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.
This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.